Today on Piano Jazz, Marianne McPartland's guest is Henry Mancini in a program from 1985. Mancini was a multi-Grammy-winning composer who became well-known in the late 1950s for the TV series theme, Peter Gunn, and his fame continued to grow for his numerous TV and film scores, such as The Days of Wine and Roses, the Pink Panther theme, and many others.
I do a lot of the symphony dates around. In fact, that's all I do now. I conduct most of the symphonies in this country.
I think that's terrific because people love your music and you've got arrangements of all your things, plus you probably do some other people's material too.
I always like to get in. Right now I have a medley, a concert medley. I play piano and I have five fellows with me that I feature, but the symphony orchestra is the centerpiece, and I do a medley of Hoagie stuff, you know. And I had the medley by the Duke for a couple of years before that.
Well, I'd love to hear one of the tunes that you've written that everybody knows so well. Can you come up with one as a solo?
Well, this is one everybody asks, my personal favorite. And at the end of each concert, I have a thing where I sit down and I play a few things. And I always start out with this because it's one of those sneaky standards, as they say. It really wants to be a standard, and I think if it hangs around a couple more years, it will be, because we've had nice records on it. George Shearing sang it. He made a singing recording of it.
I heard that, and it was very pretty, but it's a very poignant tune. You know, you must have all kinds of, to write this kind of song, you must have a part of your personality must be kind of sad or sentimental, because the songs have such a feeling like nobody else's.
Well,
you're not going to give anything away.
There are many sides of the whole thing. But actually, I work off of the screen, and it comes from the screen to me to the pencil, and that's where we are. And the picture, you remember, Audrey Hepburn and Albert Finney, was a very serious picture.
Right, yes.
About a marriage, and there are quite a few things in there that were very touching, and that's what I was playing off of, you know.
Yeah, and this is a Johnny Mercer lyric.
No, not on this one. This one was Leslie Bricus.
Oh, right, right, of course.
Let me do it.
Okay. Oh, only one chorus. I wanted to hear more.
You're going to replay that.
That's one of my favorite.
That's all I do in concerts, so I'm programmed.
Well, see, you've got so many tunes, you probably have to do one chorus of about 10 tunes.
I don't burden people with the lesser-known ones, because I know that the majority of the people know the certain standouts, you know, and I do those most of the time. And then the newer things that I've done, you know.
Yeah, because you just wrote a whole new theme and for the Thornbirds.
It
must have lots of nice melodies in it.
Well, that was a 10-hour movie, you know, miniseries, and it had 4 hours of music. And two of the themes, I do that. I do this in concert, too. I do a symphonic suite that I wrote on it. And one of the themes is Thornbird's theme, and the other one is Maggie's theme. By the way, both of these are on Jimmy Galway liked them so much that they're on the album that we did, you know, and it's a kick. Boy, I wish he were here to play it. What a singing.
He's a great player, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, he sings. I did two albums this last year, one, and to me it was, both of them were singers, except one was a flute player, with Luciano Pavarotti, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Did an album with him, and to have him singing over your left ear live with a big orchestra is a thrill. And then in the next couple of months, another great singing voice, because I think he sings with that flute.
I've seen the cover. That's as far as I've got. Now I have to get the album. And the cover is cute. With you. You're playing he's playing the flute, and you're playing what looks like a penny whistle or something.
No, I'm conducting it.
No, but on the...
Oh, no, no, I'm playing the baton.
Oh, it's...
If you look close, it's a baton.
Oh. It's very a very cute cover.
Yeah.
But I know the music is all lovely. Please play this, Maggie's theme.
This is Maggie's
theme.
Hear this. This one is the cry one, the handkerchief, the 14 Kleenex one.
Oh, yep.
Every time she got into trouble with Father Ralph, she came to me and cried on my shoulder, and I played the tune for her.
Oh, that is beautiful.
Not a dry eye in the house.
I could well imagine, especially with all the violins and the everything.
No, it called for it. You know, sometimes you can do a theme with, do a score with, let's say, a smaller jazz-oriented group. Of course, all the Peter Gunn shows were done that way. And sometimes it just cries out where you need the mice, you know, you need the strings singing away there. This was one of those.
Well, how did you learn to write so beautifully? I mean, I know you went to Juilliard.
That didn't help.
was it before then? Oh, your father was a musician, I know.
Yeah. I started piano. I started flute when I was 8. But my dad played flute, and he was a steel worker in Pennsylvania, a little town called Aliquippa.
Oh, yeah.
And so at 13, I started to become interested in the piano. And... started playing and taking classical lessons and all that, and I got to develop my ear where I would know all of the standards with the right chords. I mean, by ear, you know,
mm-hmm.
or using chord symbols, as many of us do. And then that led into an interest in the big bands of the period, in the mid-30s to the late-30s. And then I started to think about writing, you know, and it was very strange. I don't know how it, what drew me to it. I had no idea why I became what I ended up being.
But you didn't actually go and study writing, orchestrating.
No, at the beginning I did it all myself. There was a book by Frank Skinner. Frank was a marvelous arranger. He did a lot of the stock arrangements of the period, and then he became one of the top film composers out here. So that was the only guide I had. That's the only way I found out how to transpose an E-flat saxophone, you know, or a B-flat saxophone. That's why I write all my scores in transpose key now. You know, a lot of fellas that are writing now just don't transpose the scores. They just do it all in the common key.
And then transpose later?
Well, they have the copyist transpose it.
Oh, goodness. You know. Getting
well, no, that's just the way to work. That doesn't matter. It's like whether you write with a piano or without a piano. When someone's listening to a piece of music, they don't know how the composer did it. It doesn't matter.
What's easier for you, doing it with a piano?
I use a piano, yes. I use it as checks, you know, checks and balances and all of that business.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm writing a score, I pick at it. I mean, I don't work everything, the intricacies out on the piano.
Did you ever play in a club, like after you?
Oh, yes.
Did you?
I played in many, around my hometown in Aliquippa, yeah, we had... Well, there were clubs. When you say clubs, you mean...
nightclubs, you know.
Well, they had beer gardens.
Joints.
Yeah, they were joints. I did a lot of weddings, you know, just with 3 and 4 piece groups. And we used all the old tunes and some of them were new at the day in those days. You know, that's when Mood Indigo was just a baby. One of those things,
goodness.
You know.
Yeah, those great tunes and they're still great.
Mm-hmm.
But then you developed such a wonderful, like a sense of humor in music. Like the Pink Panther is that's such an interesting, cute thing.
What else would you write for a Pink Panther? You know? What else?
But it's amazing. I mean, this tune has a life of its own, and it has no lyric.
No, I'd never let them put a lyric on it. They had the Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah.
And one of the big, they had a big sponsor in. They pressed and pressed to have a lyric written, which would have been, a dumb lyric, not because they were kids, but I didn't see where it gained anything. I think it painted a picture, and it still paints a picture without words. And so I haven't let anybody go with that.
Boy, I'm glad, because the minute you do, then somebody's going to get another conception in their minds, taking from the words, where this way they really have to use their own imagination.
You know, and I could have had... Johnny, for one, would have been a great man to...
Johnny Mercer.
Yeah, to write a lyric like that, but he never asked and I never mentioned it, so I guess he felt the same way, too.
I guess so. Yeah. Well, I'd love to try and see if I can play that with you.
All right, we're going to do... I'll start out with the little seventh thing.
All right, let's see if I can come in right now.
All right, you'll be all right. Here you go. Thank you.
You know, that thing is really nice to play on. I mean, it's just like a little blues. Minor blues.
It's a minor blues, yeah. I guess that's it. Yeah.
Well, a lot of your things are so jazz-oriented, especially I remember when the Peter Gunn thing came out. That was terrific.
Yeah. Only the only thing about that was that the Peter Gunn theme was a rock and roll theme. I think, you know, dum dum bum 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 bum. We had one chord.
That's all right. That's,
yeah. But the rest of it was all, you know, kind of West Coast jazz of the period. We had Shelly Manne on the show, you know, and Red Mitchell for a while, and then Ray Brown and Jimmy Rolls after.
Wondering who played the melody part on the Peter Gunn theme.
Well, that was the solo in that on the original record. I think it was Ted Nash on alto sax. Yeah.
Well, you've had some fabulous jazz people on these things.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, I find that it gives personality, you know, because it's a very personal. The minute you do that, it takes it out of the Muzak range, you know. It puts it right back where it should be.
Well, I liked all that music, but Mr. Lucky was from that. Wasn't it?
Mr. Lucky was a show in its own. That was a different kind of show. But I used kind of the same approach, but I didn't want to copy myself exactly as far as, you know, on the underscore in Peter Gunn, when Peter Gunn was creeping around and doing this and that. There were always kind of like guys blowing on certain chords with certain backgrounds. And it was so unique. Let's say not unique, but distinctive at the time. I didn't want to carry that into Mr. Lucky. So Mr. Lucky was more of a structured kind of writing. And I think the Mr. Lucky theme is more of a jazz, actually more of a jazz piece than Peter Gunn. You know.
Oh, I've always thought that was a... I mean, a lot of people play that. A lot of jazz musicians play it, too. I made a record of that years ago. Yeah. And it was... I don't often feel too good about things I do. This is one thing I liked, and there were some horn players played behind me, you know, and it was really pretty. I'd like to play it. I don't know how it'll come out as a solo, but I'm going to have a go at it.
So, this is Marion now, alone.
This is Marion alone,
You'll hear the difference immediately.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah.
Love that tune.
Thank you.
Pretty
thank
song.
You.
Thank oh, you. Thank you for writing it. Well, you've got more new things. I mean, one thing that's great about you, you don't just write some terrific tunes and make movies and TV shows and then rest on your laurels. You keep writing and coming up with new stuff.
Well, as long as they ask, you know, as long as I'm able to respond, I'll do it. You know, there are about four themes now on various television shows that are current. You know, I have Hotel and New Heart and Believe It or Not and Remington Steel, and they're all different. I like television themes because they're each one has its own character. You know, like Peter Gunn and Mr. Lucky were two. Had their own special character, and it's the greatest short form. It really is a short form because you have to say what you're going to say in less than a minute, sometimes 40 seconds.
That know. Must be really a yeah. discipline yeah. to do that.
Well, it's not discipline; it's an order. You know, you either do it or you
else.
Don't. You don't do it.
But do you ever just say, "Well, I'm going to write a song, not for TV or not for the movies. I'm just going to write a song, and maybe you have somebody in mind to sing it."
No, I've always been oriented toward the screen, you know, toward either television or movies, and I to this day I don't feel myself or think of myself as a songwriter per se, you know.
Do you record some piano albums?
Oh yes, I did an album called A Touch of Ivory that started me playing piano. I never even played in concerts, you know, because I don't fancy myself a pianist listening to some of the great people such as yourself, of course. And I never went in that direction, but I can take a melody and make something out of it.
Yes, you sure can.
Thank you.
You sure can. Hey, you know, maybe we could try one together.
Yeah, here's another one. Huh? Yeah.
This is a lot of jazz people have recorded this tune, Dreamsville.
This was from the Peter Gunn music.
Yes.
This was written actually for Lola Albright. You remember she played the singer in the club?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We had a pretty good jazz group in that club.
That's in the 50s.
That's where Victor Feldman. I went down on the set one time, and we used to pre-record the music with the jazz group in Mother's, you know, Mother's Club.
Mm-hmm.
And we would send a track down there so that they could mime. We had vibes, piano, bass, drums, and guitar. And the guys that did the actual recording, of course, were too busy to go down and sit a whole day down there and be photographed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they, as they always do, they hire what they call standbys.
Mm-hmm.
Or sideline musicians. And I went down one day, and the group that was there was pretty good, and Victor Feldman had just come over from London. And he was playing vibes, and I listened to him for a while, and I said, God, this guy is just great, you know. And
yeah.
So he became the percussionist, the vibes player on the show after when the show sold. Finally went on.
He's a fine musician.
Oh yeah.
He's somebody I'd like to get in touch with when I'm out here.
Yeah. Yes, his sons are very, very talented too. I think he did an album, some Chopin pieces that he did for piano and group. Yeah, yeah.
And of course I remember when he was like a kid star, you know, playing the drums in London. He was a big star, like a little 10-year-old whiz drummer.
Yeah.
Well, onto something pretty and Dreamsville. Henry Mancini and Marion McPartland.
Well, this, in fact, Victor was on the original record on this, if I'm not mistaken.
Ooh, that was nice.
Well, you're through that all right?
Yeah, that was lovely.
Thank you.
Trying to get my tune straight here. That was not a Johnny Mercer lyric.
That was Ray Evans and Jay Livingston.
Right.
Yeah.
There's more to come with Marian McParland and Henry Mancini from the 1985 archives of Piano Jazz from NPR Music.
The one coming up, I'm sure, is a Johnny Mercer lyric of Charade,
uh-huh.
or Charade, yeah. as we British charade, like to call yeah. it. It's funny, every time I see Ginger Mercer, which is quite often in a club or somewhere, she always wants to hear Charade.
Yeah, that was, Johnny went, I don't know how to describe it. He went off on like another direction. I think it started with, with Moon River. Most of his lyrics, if you analyze them with the melodies that I had, were allegories, you know, like Moon River is a beautiful, you know, crossing you someday in style, talking about something meaning something else.
I don't know, I'm not sure what an allegory, I'm a little ignorant.
You say something like, in Charade, he talks about we came on next to closing. You know, he's equating it with being on the stage.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Sad
what
Little
you
Serenades, yeah. A Song of My Heart, whatever the lyric is. But and the Days of Wine and Roses, a door that was never there before. I mean, that's surrealistic almost, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, he had some mind.
Oh, but I was just thinking now, and he did the same thing on, you remember Whistling Away the Dark? He used the same kind of lyrical approach to that. It just occurred to me that he went off into a more poetic vein. Of course, he painted pretty good word pictures with Laura too. You know.
Yeah, I would say.
Or what was the other one? Midnight Sun.
Midnight Sun.
Yeah, he loved to write to melodies, established melodies, because it threw him into. Uncharted areas, you know. He'd have to conform to the melody, which in turn would throw him into different rhyming schemes than if he had just sat down and went at it, you know, with just the words first.
Talk about allegory. Mm-hmm. I guess it's what he did for me. He wrote a lyric for me. I'm very thrilled to have that, of course, a song called Twilight World. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you don't have to go with that title. Oh, yes, I will. Yes, I like that title. So he did really rather a fanciful lyric talking about the China Sea and sampans.
Oh, yeah.
It was just a very kind of, well, just a fantasy kind of lyric, and Tony Bennett recorded it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I really am thrilled to at least have, you know, one Mercer song.
Those Southern boys, I'll tell you, they, you know, I feel Johnny in his way was as meaningful as, let's say, a Tennessee Williams, you know.
Oh, I would say so. Mm-hmm. So in a different way, mm-hmm. absolutely. Very profound guy, yeah. on the one hand.
Yes.
And a real character on the other
yeah.
hand. Well, let's see what I can do and summon up. I hope John is watching, listening.
He's listening. He always listens. very nice. I like the way you got out of the release on that second chorus.
Thank you. I thought I was going to be
I was following you all the way there, and you came right out of it.
I had this terrible thought that I was going to do something. I changed my mind at the end. I was going to go... And I thought, no, it's not that kind of a song. I just don't want to give it that... Turn it around like that. So, this next tune, this Days of Wine and Roses, mm-hmm. I mean, that's another sad song.
Yeah.
I remember I saw that movie. That was with, I can't think.
Oh, Jack Lemmon and Lee
Remick. Yeah. I love Jack Lemmon. Well, I love them both. Jack Lemmon, he's a fair piano player, isn't he?
Yeah, he's marvelous.
I saw him on the Wailing Away on the Johnny Carson show.
Yeah, he plays very well, and he's a very talented guy. That picture was originally a television movie. It's a live television show they used to do on Playhouse 90. And it was very sad.
Yes.
And actually ugly in places. The television show was raw. It was just raw edge, you know. And when they did the movie, I guess they felt that that kind of thing had to be tempered somehow. To be brought to the screen, and through the script and direction, Blake Edwards directed that too, but it came out, it brought out something that was I don't think brought out as much in the television, the love story between the two of them, the fact that they were actually, you know, in love, and
of
these bad drinking things happened, and
well, that's real life, too.
Yeah, and so you have to be very careful when you get a very serious picture like that, that your theme, or in this case, it was the song, theme was the song, it doesn't get too, it has to have a quality just like the one the Soldier in the Rain had.
You mean
in its own way.
Sentimental, but not mawkish.
Yeah, almost... like you've heard it before, kind of a thing, you know, mm-hmm. like an instant nostalgia.
A deja vu kind of thing.
And actually, I heard it, the opening of the picture and the closing of the picture are solo French horn, you know, the French horn. Well, it was a different key. But that started... That was the intro to the picture, just alone, you know. And I heard, here again, as I heard Plas Johnson on Pink Panther, there's a marvelous French horn player in town, Vince DeRosa. Mm-hmm. And he has a lovely sound. He played lead on Dreamsville, you know, and that, remember the horns and trombones?
Mm-hmm.
And so I heard him. And so he started the picture, and then I took it all the way through, used the theme, and all of this is... But the end of the picture, as Jack Lemmon leaves and goes down the street... No, she leaves, leaving him with their baby, with their child upstairs, and he's kind of looking out the window, and she's going down this dimly lit street. And so the French horn comes in again at the end, just at the very end of the picture, and it just does like this... And that was the end of the picture. I thought it was kind of daring at the time.
No, but that's
but it
great.
Just hung up there, just like the picture. Mm-hmm. It, nothing was resolved. It was so hopeless, you know, that why go?
Oh,
and that doesn't make any sense.
I remember that now. All those things are part of creating the mood that you feel,
yeah,
like when
yeah.
you see the picture, when you walk out. And I remember being very moved by that picture.
But it was a case where you're used to hearing the theme come throughout the picture, and you're always used to hearing it go resolve itself.
Yeah.
But here, at the end, you're waiting, you're kind of falling off your seat, waiting for that next note to hit that never hits.
Well,
you want to do it?
Yeah, sure.
You do the intro. I'll, you know.
Shall it be in tempo?
You do what you want.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you. right. Yeah.
Oh, oh, lovely. That's a nice tune to play on.
Yeah, that this one has been, of all of the things I've written, I think this is the most, had the most jazz performances on. You know, the big band, Woody had a great record that I think Pierce, was it?
Nat Pierce?
Nat, yeah. I think he did the score on it.
Well, how did they do it? As a
it was a roar. It went. It was a big. It went. You know.
Yeah, because you know a lot of play it up.
Yeah,
in
that's
fact,
true.
I've
yeah.
done that.
Some
too,
people sing it up. You know. Yeah.
I mean, it's a lovely ballad, but it's fun to play on. It's an up tune.
Some ballads.
Also.
Yeah, that reminds me of like Brownie Capers. The Green Dolphin Street. It
oh,
just
yeah.
seems like the changes seem to go in the right direction. You
yeah,
know?
And that originally started out as such a slow tune.
Yeah.
And what it became after Miles and everybody
yeah,
got
yeah.
at it, you know, really. Well, like Moon River, which I'm going to try to render for you. a lot of people play that in four or sort of comes out to all kinds of tempos.
But yeah.
That, again, is a pretty tune to play on. I wonder what key I should do this in.
Well, I've done it in just about every key there is. Johnny used to sing it in G, and Andy Williams does it in D flat, and I do it, personally, I do it in D in
well,
the concerts.
That's a nice
yeah.
key.
That's the vocal key. That's
I'm going to try that.
Yeah.
I'm going to try that. I wanted to do it in Johnny's key.
Yeah.
As well as your key. I just thought, Johnny, you made me do that.
You went through several keys there.
Yeah, I guess I did. Yeah, Living Dangerously. Mm-hmm. You know, this whole show has gone by so quickly. It sounds like a cliche to say that, but it's so interesting talking to you, Hank,
about all
your activities. It's really something to have somebody giving such beautiful music to us all.
Well, I'll have it continue as long as I'm able, let's put it that way.
Well, it seems to me like you just have an inexhaustible supply of ideas, and we'll just be waiting for the next ones.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And meanwhile, back to one that we were talking about before, the baby elephant.
It's the thing, it's an anthem. You know, there are like Irving Berlin writes anthems for... like God Bless America, that's an anthem.
Yeah,
White Christmas is an anthem.
Yeah.
Easter Parade.
Or a hymn.
Yeah. Now, this is an anthem, a circus anthem, because every time those elephants come out to do their thing in the arena, this is always played. So I guess I have the elephant anthem here.
Is this on the James Galway album?
Yes, he plays it on Penny Whistle, on the the little tin penny whistle.
Oh, he's such a roguish kind of a guy. I can imagine he just gives this a special flavor. Well, okay.
All right, I'll start this one off with the Down the Road a Piece, Freddie Slack. Huh?
All right, I get to play on this a little bit, do I?
You do, yes, you do.
Okay.
You just nod when you want to go home.
Okay.
Been listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland and guest Henry Mancini, a program which was originally broadcast in 1985. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer is Dick Phipps, recording engineer Chuck Britz, mastering engineer Sherry Hutchinson, production assistant Charles Ball, executive producer William D. Hay. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the Friends of Piano Jazz, NPR member stations, and NPR. Support for this episode's original production was provided by a grant from Exxon Corporation. Support for the digital archiving of Piano Jazz was provided by Save America's Treasures through a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service Department of the Interior. Support for NPR comes from the Lemelson Foundation, committed to improving lives through invention in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org, and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.